He glorified the Lord and requested him for something that he felt, in one sense, quite embarrassed about, that he shouldn't have requested the Lord for, because he said that only a foolish person will ask for something, the Lord, for something that is available in this world, that is available, sense gratification, that is available in any species of life. Tasyaiva hitu prayatit kovido. So he said, it's better to ask to get out of the material world, but yet, he explained, I have a material desire. So what to do? Having material desires, okay, accepting that this is not the highest position or not the best thing, what to do? So the answer of what to do will be explained here and will be explained especially in the next canto. More or less the entirety of the next canto, canto 4, we'll talk about this point that one should worship no one but Krishna. Dhruva Maharaj, even though he had a material desire, he focused his mind completely on Krishna. And in this way, we learn that akama savakamava mokshakama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogini ajeta purusha para, that if one worships Krishna with great determination, even if one's heart is polluted, is contaminated, is not yet pure, that purity will come by Krishna's grace due to worshipping him. So Kardama Muni offered very nice prayers explaining the very nature of the material world is there with a short-term purpose of to satisfy the desires of the living entity, and a long-term purpose that if the living entities, each and every one of us, use the Vedic system to satisfy the material desires, then the result of that will be gradual detachment, which yatma supasidati, which will gradually satisfy Krishna and then ultimately satisfy us. And that will ultimately satisfy Krishna. So the material world is nothing but the energy of Krishna, and he's created it for this purpose, to bring the living entities back home, back to Godhead, back to him. So when the Lord heard these prayers of Kardama Muni, after all he had come, because Kardama Muni had performed austerities, yogic meditation for so long, for 10,000 years, and therefore, because of Kardama Muni's great purity, he had evoked the Lord's causeless mercy. And the Lord had come, and then Kardama immediately offered prayers, and now we're going to hear the Lord's reply. So first, Maitreya Muni resumes narrating this to Vidura. And who is... And that which Maitreya is telling Vidura, Sutta Goswami is telling the sages of Namastaranya. So Maitreya resumed, sincerely extolled in these words, glorified by these words, Lord Vishnu, shining very beautifully on the shoulders of Garuda, replied with words as sweet as nectar. His eyebrows moved gracefully as he looked at the sage with a smile full of affection. The Lord said, the Supreme Lord said, having come to know what was in your mind, I have already arranged for that which you have worshipped me well, for that, I have already arranged for that for which you have worshipped me well through your mental and sensory discipline. So this is the first thing that we learn, is that he arranged for it for to satisfy the desire of Kardama Muni. So what was that desire? To have a suitable wife. So he had arranged it before he came. The Lord had arranged it before he came. That means he had arranged it before Kardama Muni even asked. Which means that Krishna knows our desires even before we ask for them. Which means, practically speaking, that we don't even have to ask Krishna for material desires. He knows. And that's really the conclusion. Because Krishna will fulfill our material desires. Why ask him for that? Rather, to ask him for the highest thing and keep our mind focused on that, even though we may have material needs, and allow the fulfilling of those material needs. Let that be Krishna's, because he knows. He's in everyone's heart and he knows everyone's heart. Paramatmeti chapyutto. He is in everyone's heart. Dehes min purusha para. Within every living entity, he is the supreme person. Prabhupada explains in the purport, in his purport. The supreme personality of Godhead in his paramatma feature is situated in everyone's heart. He knows, therefore, the past, present, and future of every individual person, as well as his desires, activities, and everything about him. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that he is seated in the heart as a witness. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Personality of Godhead, knew the heart's desire of Kardama Muni, and he had already arranged for the fulfillment of his desire. He never disappoints a sincere devotee, regardless of what he wants, but he never allows anything which will be detrimental to the individual's devotional service. So especially we who fear coming to Krishna thinking that means we have to give everything up and who'll take care of me. So we may tend to shy away from worshipping Krishna for that reason. But here we see that Krishna will fulfill all the desires of the living entity, but he will there are so many ways to fulfill our desires. But Krishna will fulfill our desires in such a way that we still nevertheless make advancement in spiritual life. That's how he deals with the sincere devotee. And he won't fulfill desires that will hinder the person's advancement. Because after all, there's no material desire that we can fulfill that will actually satisfy us. It is only the pure loving service of Krishna on the transcendental platform, on the pure platform, that will bring satisfaction to the heart. Because we are souls, we are eternal. We are Krishna's servants. So we're learning here. Concepts are being put in place that will help us increase our devotion. The Lord continued, "My dear Rishi, O leader of the living entities, for those who serve me in devotion by worshipping me, especially persons like you who have given up everything unto me, there is never any question of frustration." Even if one has some desires, one engaged in the service of the Lord is never frustrated. Those engaged in his service are called sakam and akam, or sakam and nishkam. Those who approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead with desires for material enjoyment, but still approach him, chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukritino ajana, they are pious persons, but they have material desires, but yet they approach Krishna, they are called sakam. Sakam, this literally means with kam, with desires. Those devotees who have no material desires for sense gratification, but serve the Supreme Lord out of spontaneous love for him, are called akam, without desires. They have desire, but there is no tinge of material desires within their consciousness. Their desire is just to please Krishna. That is actually devotion. Sakam devotees are divided into four classes: those in distress, those in need of money, the inquisitive and the wise. So that's Atta-gigyasa-ratta-ti-gyanita. Someone worships the Supreme Lord out of bodily or mental distress. We're in trouble, we're in difficulty, we feel that there's nothing we can do. We're surrounded on a lion is attacking from this side, a tiger from that side, the government tax agents from that side, and someone behind us, a thief trying to steal our money, and we look around, oh no, what can I do? Krishna, Krishna, help! So that's, we're in some distress, but we turn to Krishna. Some misery is there. We turn to Krishna, mental, physical, we turn to Krishna. So that's sakam, with desire. Not just to please Krishna, but we want protection or something like that, or the removal of the trouble. Someone else worships the Supreme Lord because he's in need of money. Someone else worships the Lord out of inquisitiveness, jigyasa, to know him as he is. And someone wants to know the Lord as a philosopher can know him by the research work of his wisdom. There is no frustration for any of these four classes of men. Each is endowed with the desired result of his worship. But Krishna is so kind that he will fulfill the desires of everyone in such a way that they ultimately give up those desires, material desires, and only desire him. Because that desire, to only desire to serve him, will free us from the material world and bring us back to him. So Krishna satisfies the pure, in other words, he satisfies the living entity's desires in such a way that they become purified and they give up ultimately that desire, even though their desire is fulfilled. Next verse. So the Lord is saying, I knew this already, and there's no question of anyone who's worshipping me not having their desires met. And then he begins to describe. The emperor, Swayambhuva Manu, so we've already heard about Swayambhuva Manu. He was created by Lord Brahma to propagate, to complete the universe. And he's actually the brother of Kardama Muni. The emperor, Swayambhuva Manu, the son of Lord Brahma, who is well known for his righteous acts, has his seat in Brahmavarta and rules over the earth with its seven oceans. The day after tomorrow, O Brahmana, that celebrated emperor, who is expert in religious activities, will come here with his queen, Satarupa, wishing to see you. So this is the arrangement. The day after tomorrow. So sometimes when we have a material desire, well, how do you say in Bengali the day after tomorrow? Not kal, but agamikal. What is it? Agamikal? Poshudim. So, yes. Tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, something like that will come, but we want our material desire fulfilled now. Maybe. But Krishna, if we try to do it ourselves or something, in some senses we may get it quicker in some senses, but we won't get to purification and we won't actually move forward in our spiritual life. So we if we have desires, we talk to Krishna. Not proudly. Krishna, the day after tomorrow, just like Kardama, at exactly 7:15, I want my material desire fulfilled or else. Or else what? No. But Krishna, like Kardama Muni, was shy and somewhat embarrassed, but yet, this is my situation, please help me in this way, I've taken shelter of you. Humbly, like that, and see what arrangement that Krishna makes. So, he will come here, Swayambhuva Manu will come here, wishing to see you. He has a grown-up daughter whose eyes are black. She is ready for marriage, and she has good character and all good qualities. She is also searching for a good husband. My dear sir, her parents will come to see you, who are exactly suitable for her, just to deliver their daughter as your wife. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The selection of a good husband for a good girl was always entrusted to the parents. Here it is clearly stated that Manu and his wife were coming to see Kardama Muni to offer their daughter. Because the daughter was well qualified and the parents were searching out a similarly qualified man. This is the duty of parents. Girls are never thrown into the public street to search out their husband. For when girls are grown up and are searching after a boy, they forget to consider whether the boy they select is actually suitable for them. Mataji, this is nice purport. A girl may accept anyone, but if the husband is chosen by the parents, they can consider who is to be selected and who is not. According to the Vedic system, therefore, the girl is given over to a suitable boy by the parents. She is never allowed to select her own husband independently. So this is the Vedic system, and practically speaking, these things are almost unheard of nowadays. And people, if they hear that you are this arranged marriages, they think it's very primitive, like that. But what is the result of the contemporary system? Divorce, remarriage, divorce, remarriage, partnership, relationship, divorce, remarriage. So that is modern, that is progress? That is better? Children grow up with step-brothers, step-sisters, step-fathers, step-mothers. It is so rare, practically speaking, that anyone who grows up in contemporary, or 50% or something, 50%, anyone grows up with both parents, their biological parents. So it's very difficult. So why don't people think that this modern progress that everyone is so proud of, why do people are so convinced that it's actually progress at all? Everyone is in so much anxiety. Everyone is scarred by the families breaking up. And they want to, they think it's terrible, and the politicians will speak about how bad it is, and they'll want more money given by the government to fix it. But the only problem is that the very principles that modern civilization are based on, which is the sense gratification, are completely opposite to stability in family life. But they won't change that basic principle. In the Vedic culture, what is the basic principle? It is duty. You do something because it's the proper thing to be done. And not only the Vedic culture, but in every culture 50 years ago, people did things because it was the right thing to be done, not because it provided just sense gratification immediately. No, the concept was different. Why do you do something? Because it's proper. This is character. This is integrity. It may be painful, it may bring happiness, it may bring misery, but it's the proper thing to do. So therefore, we do it. But this idea of duty, gone. And in its place is the idea of instantaneous gratification of the senses. Not even the concept of duty means delayed gratification. People do the right thing because they expect a reward later on. But people nowadays, they don't like delayed sense gratification. They want instantaneous. They want when you push the button, they want the sense gratification to immediately appear. And this is basically brings the mode of ignorance. Passion brings ignorance. So the Lord speaks. Continues speaking. That princess, what's her name? Devahuti, O holy sage, will be just the type you have been thinking of in your heart for all these long years. She will soon be yours and will serve you to your heart's content. Purport. The Lord awards all benedictions according to the heart's desire of a devotee. So the Lord informed Kodama Muni, the girl who is coming to be married with you is a princess, the daughter of Empress Swayambhuva, and so just suitable for your purpose. Only by God's grace can one get a nice wife just as he desires. So usually in the Bhagavatam, it's not written on this level about how to get a nice wife and how to enjoy and how to... Because the Bhagavatam is known as the Paramhansa Samhita. It is that doctrine that is beyond the material world. Prema Pamarto Mahan, Parama Arto. It is written on the level of the greatest gain, not the lesser gains. So this, having a good wife, or a good husband, or good children, or being wealthy, or having a peaceful life, these are material gains. But although they are not the highest, and on one level, when speaking about the highest, these things are decried. Because if one wants these things, one cannot get the highest. But yet, speaking on another level, these things are required so that someone can be peaceful, so that they can think about attaining the highest goals. Because if one's in family life and one's fighting with one's wife and fighting with one's children or fighting with one's husband or fighting with the parents or something like that, the mind is so disturbed, unpeaceful, that one can't think of higher things. One just thinks about the fighting all the time. If one has a material desire that's burning in one's heart, like a red-hot ember, then one really will and must satisfy that desire before he takes properly to spiritual life. So when one is like that and has those kind of desires, therefore, one should satisfy, get those desires satisfied in a way that is parallel to spiritual advancement. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that our life has two tracks like a train. One is the spiritual and one is the material. So the spiritual track and the material track should go parallel to each other. Just imagine what happens to the train when they go in opposite directions. If the two tracks, one goes left and one goes right, what happens to the train? It's derailed. And that's what happens to people whose material and spiritual life aren't harmonious. So everyone should be situated in a natural position for them. So that they can progress peacefully and smoothly. Yet on another level, all these things are criticized. Because we have to know that although they are sometimes glorified, and said the necessity, ultimately they are the necessity for the body. The soul has no such necessity. So if we don't hear what the soul's necessity is, we'll never give up the bodily necessities. But yet, we need these things. Or if we do need them, we do need them. But yet, we should know that ultimately they are to be given up. They are not the purpose of life. So only by God's grace can one get a nice wife just as he desires. Because practically speaking, in this world, it's not possible to have a peaceful marriage unless it's by God's grace, unless one has piety. That's actually another way to look at that statement. When one has sufficient piety, one can have that kind of blessing from Krishna. Thus it is said that if we pray to the Supreme Lord in every transaction of our material existence, everything will be done nicely and just suitable to our heart's desire. In other words, in all circumstances, we must take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and depend completely on His decision. Man proposes, God disposes. The fulfillment of desires, therefore, should be entrusted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the nicest solution. Kodama Muni desired only a wife. But because he was a devotee of the Lord selected a wife for him, who was the emperor's daughter, a princess. Thus Kodama Muni got a wife beyond his expectation. If we depend on the choice of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we will receive benedictions and greater opulence than we desire. So Prabhupada is explaining things, or this section actually explains things in such a way to make us peaceful in our lives, but yet turn to Krishna. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that one should give up these shackles of material bondage slowly, because what we don't want to happen is, yes, 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 in a moment of enthusiasm, I'm going to do this, and then boing, give up everything. So the old saying of slow and steady wins the race is a very apt one in spiritual life. Yet, we shouldn't take advantage of this, because in our life, by the time that we leave our body, when the soul leaves the body, something very specific has to be accomplished. And what is that? Whatever material desires we have, they have to be finished with. Whatever material attachments we have to be finished with. Because it is in our interest. Because if we have material desires, if we have material attachments, they will cause us so much pain at the time of death, because that which we are attached to will be ripped from us, and also it will force our birth again into the material world. So this is our mission. To give up material attachment and to increase, like anything, our attachment for Krishna. And yet, we can do that slowly, but not too slowly. And the very nature of the material world is that whatever peace that we are looking for and whatever desires we'll have satisfied and whatever needs by Krishna's grace come our way, they still will be shaken. The very nature of the material world is shifting and changing. So ultimately, there is no security here in the material world. So when one is, as Prabhupada is explaining, dependent upon Krishna in every material transaction, one is really learning the art of complete dependence on Krishna, because at the time of death, that how well we've succeeded in that will be tested in developing our dependence on Krishna. And that is all that will save us, is our full dependence on Krishna. But yet, these levels are also important. So the Lord is continuing to speak to Kodama Muni. She will bring forth 9 daughters from the seed sown in her by you. And through the daughters you beget, the sages will duly beget children. So the sages that were born of Lord Brahma, they didn't have any wives. So Kodama Muni gets Devahuti as his wife, and their children will be given to the sages born of Lord Brahma. And then, so he will do that service. And actually this is a pastime, because he is an exalted person. This is a pastime. He doesn't really have these great, great entanglements and great materially burning desires. But in any case, so that's his duty. With your heart cleansed by properly carrying out my command. Now this is the process. When one carries out in a Vedic, proper, dutiful way one's duty and fulfills one's material desires in that way, the result is that the heart will be cleansed. By carrying out my commands, resigning to me the fruits of your acts. So this is basic Bhagavad Gita. That one satisfies one's material desires, yat karosi rachnasi yat johosi vidati yat yat tapasyasi kamatayat tat karosi famarapuram. You do what you want to do, but make it as an offering for me. So by resigning to me the fruits of your acts, you will finally attain me. So all should be done for me, and the result of that will be your heart and desires will become purified. And then, when one's heart and desires are purified, one moves up from Sakkam to Nishkam, and on the Nishkam or Akkam platform, one is doing one's duty with a pure heart, then, or when one's heart's purified, then one attains self-realization. Knowledge comes. So one in this way goes from the platform of karma to the platform of jnana. So by acting as per that text, dutiful action, the result is, text 31, showing compassion to all living entities, you will attain self-realization. Self-realization means knowing ourselves as an eternal soul, eternally Krishna's servant. Giving assurance of safety to all. So when one knows that he is an eternal soul, one also knows that everyone else is a soul. Giving assurance of safety to all, you will perceive your own self as well as all the universes in me and myself in you. So you will see that everything, me, everything that exists, all that, are within Krishna's energy. None different from Krishna. And yet Krishna is within everyone's hearts. Savasyataham. Showing compassion to all living entities, you will attain self-realization. So we'll speak about these two verses a little bit more a little later, but we'll continue right now. Now Prabhupada speaks about compassion in his purport about half, a third of the way through. A person in Krishna consciousness, a devotee of the Lord, is always compassionate. He is not satisfied that only himself, that he himself is a devotee only. But he tries to distribute the knowledge of devotional service to everyone. There are many devotees of the Lord who faced many risks in distributing the devotional service of the Lord to the people in general. That should be done. It is also said that a person who goes to the temple of the Lord worships with great devotion. It is also said that a person who goes to the temple of the Lord and worships with great devotion, but who does not show sympathy to people in general or show respect to other devotees, is considered to be a third-class devotee. The second-class devotee is he who is merciful and compassionate to the fallen soul. The second-class devotee is always cognizant of his position as an eternal servant of the Lord. He therefore makes friendship with devotees of the Lord, acts compassionately towards the general public in teaching them devotional service, and refuses to cooperate or associate with non-devotees. As long as one is not compassionate to people in general in his devotional service to the Lord, he is a third-class devotee. The first-class devotee gives assurance to every living being that there is no fear of this material existence. Let us live in Krishna consciousness and conquer the nescience of material existence. It is indicated here that Kardama Muni was directed by the Lord to be very compassionate and liberal in his householder life and to give assurance to the people in his renounced life. A sannyasi, one in the renounced order of life, is meant to give enlightenment to the people. He should travel, going from home to enlighten. The householder, by the spell of Maya, becomes absorbed in family affairs and forgets his relationship with Krishna. If he dies in forgetfulness, like the cats and the dogs, then his life is spoiled. It is the duty of a sannyasi, therefore, to go and awaken the forgetful souls with enlightenment of their eternal relationship with the Lord and to engage them in devotional service. The devotee should show mercy to the fallen souls and also give them the assurance of fearlessness. As soon as one becomes a devotee of the Lord, he is convinced that he is protected by the Lord. Fear itself is afraid of the Lord. Therefore, what is he to do with fearfulness? So this is very important. Vayam vitiya abhinavesha tasya rasad ambibetasya viparyayokto smiti ishad apatasya tanmayayato buddha abhijatam bhaktyayika yekam gurudeva tatma. How this fear is caused by seeing anything is separate from Krishna, every situation one is in. And the only way one can do that, or see nothing separate from Krishna, to see himself in Krishna's hands fully, continuously, is if he is a devotee of Krishna. A full, high-class devotee of Krishna. Depending fully on Krishna. And that is actually the business of a sannyasi. To depend fully on Krishna. So if one's faith is strong that he's a devotee, that he's dependent on Krishna, that he's in Krishna's hands, what bad can happen to him in this world? Even though it's superficially bad, something superficially bad can surely happen to one. One can even get killed. Prabhupada always would give the example of Thakur Haridas, who was beaten in 22 marketplace because he was born in a Muslim family. And he became a so-called Hindu chanting Hare Krishna. And therefore the Muslims, they beat him, caned him, and trying to kill him to set an example. It's the punishment. They take you from one marketplace to another and cane you so everyone sees this is what happens to people who do what he's done. But he was completely protected by Krishna. Maharaj Prickett, cursed to death, and he died, but yet he was fully protected by Krishna. Jesus Christ, Prabhupada would give the example, crucified by the non-devotees, yet arisen. So, if we say that we are fully dependent on Krishna, sometimes our faith is very severely tested. So, we don't pray for those kind of tests, maybe, but yet, at the time of death, that will be our test. Are we dependent on Krishna? Are we going to hold on to him as our everything? If we try to hold on to anything else, it will crumble and we'll be terrified. To award fearlessness to the common man, Prabhupada continues, is the greatest act of charity. A sannyasi, or one who is in the renounced order of life, should wander from door to door, from village to village, from town to town, from country to country, all over the world as far as he is able to travel, and enlighten the householders about Krishna consciousness. A person who is a householder but is initiated by a sannyasi has the duty to spread Krishna consciousness at home as far as possible. He should call his friends and neighbors to his house and hold classes in Krishna consciousness. Holding a class means chanting the holy name of Krishna and speaking from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. There are immense literatures for spreading Krishna consciousness, and it is the duty of each and every householder to learn about Krishna from his sannyasi spiritual master. There is a division of labor in the Lord's service. The householder's duty is to earn money because the sannyasi is not supposed to earn money, but is completely dependent on the householder. The householder should earn money by business or by profession and spend at least 50% of his income to spread Krishna consciousness. 25% he can spend on his family and 25% he should save to meet emergencies. This example was shown by Rupa Goswami, so devotees should follow it. Actually, to be one with the Lord means to be one with the interest of the Lord. Becoming one with the Supreme Lord does not imply becoming as great as the Supreme Lord. It is impossible. The part is never equal to the whole. The living entity is always a minute part. Therefore, his oneness with the Lord is that he is interested in the one interest of the Lord. The Lord wants every living entity to always think about Him, to be His devotee, and always worship Him. This is clearly stated in Bhagavad Gita. Man mana bhava mad bhakta. Krishna wants everyone always to think of Him. Everyone should always offer obeisances to Krishna. That is the will of the Supreme Lord, and devotees should try to fulfill His desire. To always remember Krishna and never forget Him. And Prabhupada explained in the purport a very easy way to do that, easy in one sense, practical way, is that one should always offer his obeisances to Krishna and pray to Him in all our acts, even in all our transactions, even if they're material. One day I was driving down the street downtown in Perth, and there was this one Muslim man. He was walking to the street, and what do they call those when they wear those white burqa? So he was wearing his burqa, and he was wearing his little, what are the hats called? Hat. So he's wearing his hat, and he came to the intersection, and before he walked across, he prayed. So I thought that was very nice. Sometimes I've seen that too. I've been driving in a taxi in India, and you go around you're going around a curve, and you can't see around the curve. So I've seen the drivers praying as I go around. But you'd sometimes prefer that they would also look where they're driving, not only pray, sometimes they do that. So even if we're going to pray in every transaction walking across the street, we should still look both ways or whatever. And still be careful, do our part of the duty, but ultimately we should pray and talk to Krishna continuously. Who am I to be able to do anything? Everything depends on you, depending on you. This is a very nice consciousness. Manmana, bhava mad bhakta. Always think about Krishna. So that is oneness of interest. And in doing that, we should try to preach and follow Krishna's interest, make our interest one with Krishna's interest, and somehow take part in Krishna's desire and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire and Prabhupada's desire to help the fallen conditioned souls. And if we help the fallen conditioned souls, we'll stop being fallen conditioned souls. That's the blessing of helping. Text 32. O great sage, the Lord is continuing. He's saying that, remember he's saying that, he said that I've already knew your desire before you asked me, and I've already made the arrangements. I'm getting this very perfect girl for you to marry, and by performing your duty properly, you'll become detached and you'll become elevated, so you'll be able to see be fully fixed in oneness with me and desire, see me in everything and everything in me. Now it continues. O great sage, now it gets better and better. What will the Lord do for this great sage? I shall manifest my own plenary portion through your wife, Devahuti, Samsa, Kalya. Along with your 9 daughters. So Krishna is going to incarnate as Kapila Muni, as the son of Devahuti and Kardama Muni. And I shall instruct your wife Devahuti in the system of philosophy that deals with the ultimate principles of categories. That is called Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya means counting. So it's a counting of the categories that the material world is composed of. And we'll be hearing about this later. The rest of the canto is a prelude to Kapila Muni's preaching to Devahuti and explaining this philosophy. And then in the last chapters, quite a few chapters, starting maybe in 25 to the very end in 33, the preaching and teachings of Kapila Muni will be described. So he's after explaining that he will come and explain the philosophy of Sankhya. Then the Lord Maitreya continues and says, thus having spoken to Kardama Muni, The Lord who reveals himself only when the senses are in Krishna consciousness departed from that lake called Bindusarova, which was encircled by the river Saraswati. So he actually saw Krishna because he was already purified, Kodama Muni did. While the sage stood looking on, the Lord left by the pathway leading to Vaikuntha, a path extolled by all great liberated souls. The sage stood listening as the hymns forming the basis of the Samaveda were vibrated by the flapping wings of the Lord's carrier, Garuda. Prabhupada's purport. No, we won't read the purport. Yes, we will. This starts about halfway, near the bottom of the page. Here it is also confirmed that the path of devotional service is worshipped by liberated persons, not the conditioned souls. The conditioned souls cannot understand the devotional service of the Lord. Kodama Muni was a liberated soul who saw the Supreme Lord in person, face to face. There was no doubt that he was liberated, and thus he could see Garuda carrying the Lord on his way to Vaikuntha and hear the flapping of his wings, vibrating the sound of Hare Krishna, the essence of the Samaveda. Okay, so tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we'll finish this chapter because we will hear about the meeting between Swayambhuva Manu and Kardama Muni tomorrow. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Giving assurance of safety to all. Go ahead. What do you mean? Yeah. It makes it difficult.
One was, it was like in the first time he said it, that's one person takes 30, and he said that by seeing one, it's all
the sannyasis and the householders.
Yeah.
And they both should take part in the preaching according to their capacity and situation. But the safety was really meant to mean and just devotion and surrender to Krishna and becoming a devotee of Krishna. And that, because on the material level, there is no safety. Everyone has their karma. But on the soul level, there is full safety. And even Krishna, if he so desires, will protect his devotee on the material level, as he did with Haridas Thakur. As he did in so many instances. Bhagavatam. While you're hearing, what do you think?
It's amazing.
Why is it amazing?
Because it's Samadhi.
It has a potency, yes? Prabhupada explains in the fourth canto that if one can hear Bhagavatam, one will be free of all miseries, at least during the time, anxieties, at least during the time he's listening or speaking. It's actually the transcendental literature. So the key, see, is to somehow or another always be engaged in some either hearing Bhagavatam or preaching or serving Krishna, but the mind has to be somehow engaged. The more we can do this, we can just be beyond our material limitations. But it's not easy. But it's not easy being caught by the material energy either. Find it?
Yes.
Okay.
It's kind of hard. It's a
second class and third class devotee.
Oh yeah, I remember that part.
And then
the first class devotee.
Yeah. So it looks to say the first class devotee gives assurance to every living. This is on page 178 in the first.
Yeah.
The first class devotee gives assurance to every living entity that there's no fear for this material existence. But as living Krishna conscious and conquer the nescience of material existence.
Nice, yeah.
This appears that it's tying together first class devotee and sannyas order.
Huh?
It's just tying together first class devotee and sannyas order.
That's a first class sannyas.
Yes, yes.
That's. It's also Paripajakacharya, really, but also for a first class devotee, what is it? Punam Sukha Sakayate, Vishwapuna Sukayate, means that the material world is a happy place because he's not in the material world. He sees Krishna everywhere. He sees in everything that happens, he sees Krishna. This is the actually only way to be happy in the material world, because otherwise it's not happy, it's not possible. But yes, definitely, the parallel is being made between the sannyasi, meaning the Paripajakacharya. Because what the Paripajakacharya has to, is he's developed his dependence on Krishna to the degree he can just wander anywhere and just whatever Krishna wants. So he has that experience, that realized experience. Let us live in Krishna consciousness and conquer the nescience of material existence. That there's no fear of material existence if we're in Krishna consciousness. If we're in Krishna's hands, God's hands, where is there fear? What is there to be afraid of when fear itself is afraid of the Lord? So the sannyasi, is that's his dharma. Yes, yeah. Because they can't travel. But this is actually the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. If one examines the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's what he did. So he was the personification of Bhagavad Dharma in that sense. In his household of life, where did he preach? He preached in Navadvip, Mayapur. And then he took sannyas, went to South India. And he was Paripajakacharya doing that. And then he retired in the Dham and preached to his followers. So these are the different stages that his life went to. And then he didn't preach to outsiders after a while. He preached to his followers. And then finally, Nirjan Bhajan. He just relished deep separation from Krishna. So these four stages are nice to notice and to... And to emulate, because he was the acharya, he was taught by example. Okay, thank you very much. So you have to. Are you staying in the ashram now, or living nearby? So everyone has to get in a position that is suitable for them. If it's too hard in the ashram for you at this point, don't stay so much so that when you